I wanted to ask something on that question.
Yes, but if you dislike to ask a question, yeah.
No, it's not a question. When you were talking about forgiveness, and I think what perhaps missing that the fact that people do repent and people can genuinely forgive. And I think that's the power of Christianity. And when you were talking about shaking hands with people or who are shorted, I wrote about 7 instances here of people who have done that, very thing. You will know of Joe Berry and Pat McGee. Pat McGee was the man who planted the IRA bomb in Brighton, which almost wiped out the Tory cabinet. When they were released with the peace agreement as the amnesty, Joe Berry, who is the daughter of Sir Robert Berry, who died in that bombing, went into Belfast looking for Pat McGee to try to meet him and understand what was going on. Pat McGee refused to meet him, to meet her for some time, but she persisted, and they finally met. And they are now together, she forgave him, and they're now doing reconciliation work together. They've been to Israel, they've been to Rwanda, they've been to South Africa, they've been to prisons together as a pair, working on reconciliation. So people can really repent and forgive. Nelson Mandela, when he came out of prison, one of the things he did, he went and visited Mrs. Fairfoot. Prime Minister was the one who put Mandela in prison almost for life. So he went and said, I've forgiven your husband and I've come to see you. Same with, I can go through there, but 7 instances. I have had someone from Ireland, Northern Ireland, who has written to me. He killed members of the IRA. He was on the other side. He was sentenced to life. He did 15 years and he has come out and married a Roman Catholic. And he's written to me and says, could I put him in touch with a radical church? Because what he's finding at the Republic, that the churches are not talking about reconciliation. So people can really change and forgive genuinely.
I agree.
One of the factors in my mind, which applies not in every case, but in some cases, is that there is a real grievance. I think of Northern Ireland. If I was a Catholic, I would think, what right are these Protestants to come and take over the land? Or in Palestine, the local Palestinians see the Zionists as coming in, taking over. Now, the question is, how do you convince what I would call the oppressors that they have a genuine grievance against them? You know, I think perhaps the younger generation of Israelis have got so brainwashed, they just can't see that the Palestinians have a case. Mm-hmm. And this would be similar, maybe in sort of Zimbabwe, there was a genuine grievance about the whites having all the good farmland. How do you get it across to the oppressors that the other side has a genuine grievance?
Well, I think one of the things that you've got to do, but it has to be done the right way, is education. A historical education. So for example, at the moment I'm involved with a number of projects and I've touched on it a little bit, where you look at history together. But sometimes not together. That's too challenging initially. But I've been working with the Loyalist group on several occasions, and we look back at history. But, this presents difficulties too, because if I go into a post-working class Loyalist community that is already feeling down on its knees for reasons, that I've maybe touched on a little bit about industrial decline, feeling that you're the wrong end of history, etc., and you go in and you portray grievances committed in your name, it seems, from 100 or several hundred years ago, or even a century ago, or even 50 years ago, you can end up demoralizing what's already demoralized. Now, there are people who need to know about harms done in their name in the past. But they're very often maybe more likely to be the power brokers than you think, don't think that they actually had a role maybe to play in it. So I'm just sort of sounding a note of caution about how you go about it, but I think historical education is a highly important thing. Will you just look at the past? So for example, in the case of, I talked about the plantation of Ulster when my ancestors came across. Number one, you've got to see that this was, as I saw it and explained it to you, an experiment in empire which did wrong to the peoples who were there at the time. And I think an acknowledgement of that amongst unionists and loyalists would be important. But on the other hand, to explain that that happened all over the world. You know, the history of migration, the history of conquest is fairly ubiquitous. And that doesn't mean you're in some kind of uniquely shameful place, which is which I think would be a wrong thing and would demotivate and demobilize the possibilities for a growth in self-confidence again out of the ashes of having seen yourself as being, you know, the oppressor, as you put it.
Did you want to say?
Yes, as I said, I spent quite some time in this April and May in Israel-Palestine and listening to both sides, from politicians to students on both sides. And trying to understand how the state of Israel, the policies of the state of Israel, are making the Jewish or Zionist people a mirror image of what they were in Germany, they're doing to the Palestinians. But the hope is that there are Israeli people, Jewish people, who are saying what is happening is wrong, and they are more forming alliances with Palestinians. There are peace groups, Israeli Jewish peace groups forming alliances with Palestinian peace groups. There are groups called, for instance, the families of the bereaved, both Jews who have lost people in the conflict and the Palestinians who have lost people in the conflict, who are coming together to understand what is happening. And the idea of education is very important. You have here the people, young people in the University of Bethlehem, which is about 3 miles from Jerusalem, the Hebrew University. They are students at the university. They've never met each other. They've never spoken to a Jew, or the only Jew they've spoken to has been a policeman knocking at their door at night. But there is that change. There are people, young Jewish people, who are saying, well, what's this all about? You tell about the Holocaust, and you're asking us to treat these people in the same way. So you're having a change. I think that they're having a change in young people about the mentality, about what's happening. And of course, there's also the international change in attitude. After Gaza this year, there was a big international outcry saying, we can't let Israel get away with this. So I think the international tide will change, change South Africa, and I'm sure it will change as well.
What is causing that change? I mean, can it be helped along?
What is changing? Well, I think the international understanding, emphasis on human rights, keep talking about the reconciliation, the need for peace. The people, the need for doing things in a different way, that violence that has not worked and killing each other is not really right, and that we are the one thing that is in human commonality, we are both in the image of God, whether you're Jewish or Muslim in Israel person. In Zimbabwe, you mentioned there are young people in Zimbabwe, they say, we never lived under white rule. You tell us how white rule was oppressive. But Mr. Robert Mugabe, you are oppressing us as well. So things should change.
Can I just ask if there are any specific questions for Sheldon? Because he's got to go off very quickly. Yeah?
Doesn't it seem, it's not a coincidence, a good instance, is that in a lot of Northern Ireland and South Africa in particular, there was a huge amount of prayer and concern for those countries, and God raised up or change attitudes of leaders. And it seems to me that God in the past has always raised up particular people to meet the leadership of the situation. It needs leaders, yes. Godly men. And that surely if we want things to change, I think of Sheldon, the challenge he brought to us, we should be more concerned in seeking God to move and to raise up people and to support them. That seems to be a key yes. to yeah. all of these situations.
We need prophetic voices.
Other questions? Once again, if we can relate specifically to Sheldon, because he's going to be going off very quickly.
Can I ask just about the whole business of the absent father? What can you say a little bit more about that, or why that's such an issue in contemporary culture?
From a black perspective, there are a couple of theories that are going around, which is to do with the slavery situation that happened to us 400 or 500 years ago, where blacks were taken out of Africa and sold. When we first landed in the Caribbean and then on to Virginia, which is the Americas. And when we went on to the plantations, when we had the baby, the child was then taken from us and sold. So the man never ever had a chance to raise the child because the babies were worth a lot of money. And so they were sold. So there is that theory that has been bandied around by certain criminologists in America, especially African Americans and historians. There's the theory as well that black men have been demonized in society, going back to the part where I spoke about how I felt as a young black man growing up, I felt demonized because having not had love from my mum and my dad, and having no love from society, and the way society treated young black men at that time, in that time period, made us feel that we was worthless. So it meant that we weren't wanted by our own people, black people, parents. We weren't wanted by society, the white general population. So it made us feel, in a way, demonized. So it then made a lot of black men have no attachment to family. There is that theory that is going around. I have my own theory, which is slavery does play a part, but I believe that there is, within the black community, we try to find excuses. I grew up blaming white people for how I was feeling. But what Jesse Jackson said to me was, if you knew your purpose in life, you would overcome external problems, i.e. where you're coming from, where you're living, the history of where you're, what happened to you. Because what he was saying to me was that the same issues that I had, he had, and so did Martin Luther King. But they didn't allow it to come into them to the point where they were self-destructing. They use that and go into God to say, we need direction, we need help. And it was through that I began to realize the bigger picture. I personally believe that a lot of young black men use the slavery and colonialism as an excuse and a justification to justify their behavior. My message is not a nice message to my own community, but I believe it's an honest message. And I believe that, like Jesse Jackson said, we can't keep blaming. That's been a problem of the black community. Now, the white underclass, which is now emerging in almost the same situation, fatherless white family households, they too are blaming, but it's a different sort of blame. They're now blaming dependency or the state. So the state is shifting from white underclass are now being stopped from being dependent on the state, because most crime families started out by being dependent on the state, then they got involved in crime. And so because the government slowly over a period of time of slowly eradicating codependency, these young white underclass families are now trying to blame the government for their demise. In other words, I'm blaming the government why I can't look after my child. I'm blaming the government because I don't have this. And so there's a blame culture in society for different reasons. Blacks are blaming it for slavery. White underclass are blaming it because you're taking away from me the welfare state and forcing me to do something that I'm not used to doing, which is work. So I think there, to answer your question, I think there's a blame society. And we spend a lot of time blaming than looking inward. So I think for me, because of Jesse Jackson and Bernie Grant, I began to look inward at myself as a black man. And what is my contribution to society, despite the minority of police? Because let's be totally honest, there was no facts that I had to prove that every police officer was racist. It was just based on my narrow-minded thinking that because I had come into contact with 5 or 6, 7 police officers, I then used that as my way of saying they're all racist. Again, with the National Front, I said that every white person was in the National Front, which actually was not true. So again, it was based on my own narrow thinking that allowed that. But then once I began to learn from Bernie Grant and Jesse Jackson that I've got to look at the bigger picture, that's when I realized, actually, there's good and evil in everyone, but it's what you do with that determines your attitude in society. So I just think there's a lot of blame. I just think that we blame people for what we do. And I don't see how you can blame government for not raising your child or blame slavery for not raising your child.
Okay, yeah. I just want to give the chance, because we were supposed to finish at this point. If anybody needs to go, they can go. Would most of you able to stay a few more minutes? Yeah, okay, but if you need to go, don't feel. Harold, yes?
Just to follow up on that question, what can the church do to replace the father? Now, we have a young man in our church who had a troubled childhood and has become a Christian, and he rebelled immediately when somebody said, God our Father. But he said, no, my father, when I think of a father, it wasn't like God, So how do we approach that to actually replace that fatherhood in a person's
mind? For me, I think that's quite straightforward in the sense of where the church is love and hope. Love conquers a multitude of sin for me. And I just think that what young men need, I believe this or not, you'd be surprised. You went onto one of those estates like I do, all these guys want is just someone to talk to. I'm gonna tell you the truth. I know it sounds really strange because they've got guns or they've got weapons, they've got drugs, and you wouldn't believe, you'd be thinking, no, you can't. But actually, the truth of the matter is, these young men and women, and it's a lot more men than women, by the way, I'm not suggesting there's a lot of women, there's not. They just want anybody to just say, hello, how are you? And you will be quite surprised of how broken they will be feeling because they don't have that. They don't have a simple, hello, how are you? What can I do to help you, young man? I see you sitting on this wall every day. You know what I'm saying? It's, they just want somebody to say hello and show them that what was missing in their life, which is affection, just showing them to look, you know what, I may not be your dad, but what can I do to help you? Do you want me to help you write a letter for your CV? Do you want me to help you put your CV together? And I think that's what's missing in society. Where this is what the church did in the old days. The church would, in the 50s and 60s, would be out on the estates, and you would see the pastor, the reverend, just walking past, hello. And they knew them. They knew the preacher first name. The preacher knew the child. The preacher knew the uncle, the dad, the father. That's what it was like, and that's gone. And I think a simple hello, a simple hug, and a simple "What can I do to help you, young man?" I believe me, is more than suffice. It isn't complicated. I know sometimes we like to believe because the news and the media makes you believe you can't engage with these guys. Bernie White did not know me. He was from Aringay. I was from Brixton. He did not know me. He didn't care that I may have had a gun or I didn't. He wasn't interested. He just knew there's a young man that needs some help, so I'm gonna go. And it was just, what can I do to help you? I was quite shocked because no one's ever said that to me before. And he took me to his house, made me dinner, invited me to go to America, paid for my plane fare, went to America. It was that simple. It wasn't hard. He didn't do anything that was so extraordinary, and he wasn't even a Christian. That's the bad thing, not the bad, sorry. That's the thing about that situation. He weren't even a Christian, but he brought me to a Christian through love. All he did was, what can I do to help you? He was not put off by what violent acts I did. He was not put off by what gun I had. He just simply said, what can I do to help you? And because I had no one, my whole guard came down. I was not the hardcore gangster anymore. It was, whoa. So I just think a simple hello, simple hug when appropriate, a simple what can I do? And I guarantee you, 95% of those guys on the streets will respond to you.
That is something we all need.
Can I just make a comment?
Yeah.
I was sat there through both Sheldon's great presentation and Philip's as well, and a part of the thought that kept coming back into my mind was, you know, who am I? Who are each of us? We're not in that situation. I'm not Northern Irish. I'm not originally from Jamaica, or I mean, I've lived in Stockwell for many years, but I'm not in the middle of a gang situation. Who am I? What can I do? What right do I have even to say what I think should happen? Because I'm an outsider in that kind of situation. But I think that point that you just said there is absolutely the most profound thing and the simplest thing, that actually we just need to treat one another in our society today, whether we are dealing with people who are perpetrators of crimes or whether people that have just suffered massive loss and they have a face on them. We just need to treat them as human beings and build respect at whatever level we possibly can. It strikes me, it does start as simple as that. And it's that sort of starfish principle, isn't it? That if you've got a beach full of starfish, then you think it's impossible. How can I fix this problem? Well, one person starts throwing those starfish back in the sea. And I know that's, again, a simplistic kind of position, but it just strikes me that actually that is the basics of it. And if all of our churches in this land, in this world, did that, wow, what a transformative power that would be. Remarkable. Mm-hmm. Can I just read a verse from Hebrews 12?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm often reminded of this beautiful verse, which I'm sure we all know. After a chapter of talking about by faith and certain characters, especially some unsavoury characters that are in that 11th chapter of Hebrews. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart.
The unfortunate thing is, in Jamaica, I did some work with the gangs in Jamaica, and you might have heard the news a few years ago when they were after one particular gangster called Didus, and it made national news. When I went to Jamaica to work with the gangs out there a few years ago, I went to the churches, because I'm from England and I'm alone. So it's, you know, I'm going to my homeland, but obviously I don't know things because things have changed. And I went to 7 churches to find out who would come with me into the ghettos of Jamaica, which is West Kingston, which is Trenchtown, Jonestown, Annamantown, and parts of Spanish Town. And you could hear a pin drop in these churches. No one came. So anyway, I did feel a bit intimidated. I was thinking, wow, I'm gonna have to go out on my own then. Well, I asked God, I said, look, God, you know what? I've asked people and I don't really fancy going on my own, because in Jamaica it's different. You know, it's shoot first and ask questions at another time. That's the attitude of gangsters in Jamaica and Mexico. It's not like here. It's real serious out there. And God just reminded me, I think I spoke to somebody earlier about Gideon, that, you know, who said you needed anyone? Do you understand? So I went out there, and cut a long story short, when I went to Trenchtown, this is what the gang members told me. I am the first Christian that they have seen since they've been born coming to them to tell them about the hope. That is what they told me. These gang members were 21. I was the first. Then the man carefully took me around the corner and showed me a church that was on the corner of where he lived. And he said, this is what they do. They come in their cars and go in their cars. And he said, you come all the way from England into a gangland territory to bring hope, but you're the first person we've seen do that. And he said to me, that's why we don't believe in Christianity anymore, because he said that no one in Jamaica reaches out. Now, again, I'm not saying he's right or wrong, I can't prove or disprove it. But the point what he said, several of them had said the same thing to me, that I was the first person and I was from England. I was so shocked, I phoned my wife in the car and said, the man's telling me I'm the first man here, because I was shocked. And I just think, as Christians, despite what's happening in the world, and my man spoke about Ireland and the Irish situation and what's happening across the world, I think Christians have lost faith in evangelism, we have lost faith in community, and I think we've allowed the media to cause mass hysteria in us, and instead of us actually walking in the boldness of Christ. And I think that has damaged us across the world. Do you know, it really has damaged us, in the sense of Mexico is now spiraled completely out of control because of the gang situation, and Mexico was a deeply, deeply religious-based country. You know, we've got gangsters that go in there and ask the reverend to pray for their gun. Things have gone backwards. So I'm just saying that I think for me, I don't want England to go like Jamaica. I don't really want England to go like America. America, I don't know if you've been there, but it's the worst place on earth in terms of violence. Honestly, the violence that you get in America, you don't even get in the townships of South Africa. And I know people like to believe that America is a great place. It's not. And the reason why is because the churches are more interested in the prosperity of their churches rather than the prosperity of people. And so I've been to America. I was taken around America by Jesse Jackson and saw despair beyond your imagination. I saw crack babies. I saw hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of adults hooked on crack, not children, adults, who were shaking and offering them service to you so that you can pay them so that they can get their next fix, with the baby in the right hand and offering to perform sexual duties while they had the baby in the hand. So I have seen those kind of situations. And America, Jamaica, has some of the most Christian churches strategically placed, and yet they're non-effective. And I don't really want England to become non-effective. That's my message, and that's what I say to people. There's not a strategy around this. It's simple. Hello, hug, what can I do for you? It's that simple. When I went to that gangster, I've never met him. He had his gun right there. And all I said to him is, obviously I can speak Jamaican, so I said, Wagwan. And the mere fact that I said Wagwan, and I was from Britain, we had a conversation for four to six hours. And he brought all the rest of them, they brought all their guns, and they sat down for 4 to 6 hours and didn't sell any drugs during the time that I was there, just because they were shocked that I had spoken to them and I was a Christian. And I know that I'm no one special. I know that. So I'm like, if God can do that for me, what could God do for everybody, every Christian in this world that actually said, you know what? I'm going to go out today to those areas where we don't go, and I'm just going to say hello. I'm just going to try to see what I can do. We could change life just like that, and you won't need government. Because when you change your heart and your head, God changes you, you make the changes. So I just think, my experience in Jamaica and America tells me that we're following them, and we need to stop. We can't follow America, and we can't follow Jamaica or Mexico. We need to re-engage with our young.
I think something you should perhaps look into is why in America and in this country, why a number of young black people who go to prison convert to Islam from prison rather than to Christianity.
We have already done the research on that. And it's quite simple. Because Christianity is no longer engaging with people, they don't feel that Christianity is for them. And so these guys look at Muslims. Muslims tell a lot of lies as well. I know I'm not being politically correct here, but unfortunately, they do lie to them by saying to them things like, oh, if you become a Muslim, you can still drug deal. Well, actually, in the Quran, you can't drug deal. That's not actually true. So there are a lot of mind-bending situations going on where they completely manipulate. Plus, young black guys feel vulnerable because they've got no love going on, so they're attached to anything. I've experienced that when I became a Rasta, you know. So for me, the reason why they turn to Muslim is, one, there's not enough Christians really strong and bold enough going out there and challenging and facing these guys, and the Muslims don't mind lying, you know, don't mind kind of manipulating. And to them, they kind of force them, because actually, in some of the prisons, they use force to convert people. Christianity is not about force. So there's a big difference. So I don't take their conversion serious. When I deal with Muslims, I don't take that conversion serious, especially I'm dealing with a black guy who's become a converted Muslim. I don't take that conversion serious because it ain't heart and mind. It's just how he found it easier to become a Muslim in a prison, because then he gets protection. So, you know, I just think for us, we just need, as Christians, to take more, re-engage with our community.
Any questions? Actually, I think we'd probably better draw to a close. Do you mind if I just say a word of prayer? So as we go forth from this place, help us to remember what we've been learning here today. May we go to show the love of Christ in the power of Christ to this world that belongs to Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Keep going. I'll mention this. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I went to Belfast.
Did you?
Yeah, it's to do with the gang. Well, there's a gang out there that's a high profile gang member. Uh-huh. He was in the news recently as well from Dublin.